Okay, we're starting at the top of Tzadei Amar Aleph, but the two dots. The Mishnah said, for certain materials that are used in dyeing, klipei gozim, klipei rimonim, stis upoak, delitzboa beged katan. The amount that you need is to dye a small piece of cloth, a small beged, which we saw before is the center of the svacha, of the netting, the hair netting. For a minute, motzis manim shruim, kidelitzboa behen dugma liira. If you take out soaked dyes, in order to dye, then you need enough that would present a sample, a dugma, a sample, the ira, for the balls of the wolf. So, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuah, the fish ain't a dam, toreach lishrotz mamanim, let's bow behind dugma, the ira. That people don't make the effort just to set up a dyeing mechanism or to put the dyeing process in motion just to make a sample. So there's a difference between when you're talking about making dyes versus when you already have the dye in hand. So if you have the dye in hand, then people might use it for a small sample. But if you're talking about the materials or the raw materials to make a dye or to start the process of dyeing, that you need a larger amount. Nobody's going to start that process unless they have a larger beged in order to dye. Meraglayim, urine, which was used as a detergent. Tana meraglayim ad memyom, till 40 days. For the first 40 days, it still has its ammonia still strong, and therefore it's good for detergent. After that point in time, it weakens, and it's no longer useful as a detergent. Neter, tana, neter alexandrit, below neter, an pantrin. So that should be this neter that comes from Alexandria of Mitzrayim, and not the neter, the natron that comes from this place, Anpantrain, which was a city established by Herod along the coast. It's a little south of Caesarea, what was classified as the northernmost border of Yehuda at that time. Borit, Amar Yehuda, Zechol. Borit is a type of sand. This is lye. So here it says it's a type of sand. It's a difficult gemara. There is an alternative gersa in the gemara because if you remember, we already had a Mishnah that told us how much you need to take out for sand. So here, if you say it's sand, then why do you need to define for us another measurement of how much sand did you need to bring out? So Sofot raises that possibility, says maybe it's a different type of sand, it's a different nature to this sand, but there is an alternative girsa that Tosfot does mention that it was ze ohalo, this is aloe, batanyo. Then we have a brayta, borit vachol. You have a brayta that seems to indicate that they are two separate things. You have the lie and you have the sin. Elamai borit. So what is borit in the end? Kavrita. Kavrita is sulfur. Meitve, osif alen, by shvi'it. They added on these items that do have kedushat shvi'it. Achal bitzin, va'alinun, va'borit, va'ol. So you have, it's not easy to define. Kalvitzim, it's so thistles. Or ornithogalum. You have wormwood, and you have this borit, which is lye and oil, which is aloe. V'isakadatka kavrita. If you really think that it is sulfur, kavrita mita bishvit. When does sulfur have din of kedushat shvit? Zakalal. This is the general principle that we have in the brayta by shvit. Kosh yesh lo ikar, yesh lo shvit. Anything that roots and has a stalk, has shvit. Shein lo ikar, ein lo shvit. Something that doesn't root, doesn't have shvit. And sulfur is not coming from a rooted plant. It's not something that you consider to have kedushat shvit. Elo ma borit. So what's the final decision? Borit is olo, that it's aloe. Vatanya, don't we have a brayta that says va-brit va-olo, that we have them being separate, that the lie and the aloe are separate? Shrei gavne olo, there are two types of aloe. In the end, the Gemara says that it's a type of aloe, and there are two types of aloe. Kimolia, which was the simoleon earth, which again was a type of cleansing clay. Amri Yehuda, shalof dots. It was known by the more common colloquial. Shalof means to take out, and dots means to push in. Whatever that means, I don't know if that's how they removed it from the ground, that's how they got it, but that was the more colloquial name for it. Ashleib, Amar Shmuel, Shiltino Lechon Nechute Yama. I asked all the seafarers what this is. Ramuli, Shun Ana, Shimei, that's the name of this item. Umishtakach Benukva de Marganita, Mavkele Beramsa de Barzalo. It's found in the hole of the pearl, and you take it out, you have to wedge it out with a metal nail. So it's inside, I guess, the oysters where they find the pearl. There's some sort of liquid alongside of that, or white that is alongside of that. That is an alkali that they would use as part of this cleansing process. And that's what is known here as this eshleg. Okay, the next Mishnah is pilpelet kolshehu. Now this pilpelet, as Rashi notes, ain't pilpel shalono. It's not of our type of pepper. It's a long pepper, some sort of skinny and long pepper. Vitran, koshahu, any of those have any amount. Minei b'samim, u'minei matechot, any types of spices, metals, koshahain, any amount. Me'avnei mizbeach, u'me'afar mizbeach, when it comes from the stones of the mizbeach, the dirt of the mizbeach. Makak sfarim, the dust of the sfarim, but this is generated by the parasites that eat the sfarim, and it generates a dust of sort. V'makak matpechotehem, as well as the dust that's generated from the covers of the sfarim that are decayed or eaten by the worms. Koshu, again, those are koshu, not because they are significant in of themselves, but because matznin otan gonzan, they require gniza, and since they require gniza, people keep even the smallest amount to put into gniza. So they attain a significance because of the necessity to put them into gniza, and therefore people will store even the smallest amount of them. Even if you take out things that are used in the service of avodah zarah, also that's even the smallest amount. Shenemar, that you're not allowed to have even the smallest amount left over from the avodah zarah. So again, the requirement that you have none to give significance to the amount that you may not have. If that's the case, then whatever you have is significant because you have to get rid of it. You have to dispense of it. Now the Gemara expands. Pilpelet koshu the maichazio. This pilpelet koshu, what are you going to do with it? This long pepper, if it's the smallest amount, what is it good for? Where it says, l'reach hapeh, for bad breath. You chew on it in order to improve one's bad breath. Itran koshu, what is this itran, smallest amount, useful for? The maichazio, what is it roi for? Leo tzilchato. Tzilchato seems to be what we call migraine headache. Rashi says it's ke'ev chatzi arosh, a headache on half the head, but I think it is a migraine. Mine bisamim koshein, spices any amount, on rabbanan. Hamutzi reach ra koshehu. You take out something that is malodorous, even the smallest amount. Shemen tov, koshu, aromatic oil is also koshu. Argaman, the purple wool, purple dye koshu is any amount. Ubetulat havered achat, and a petal of a young rose, one petal of a young rose also is a koshu. It's interesting over here on the side. You can see the Mesorah Tashas brings down other alternatives to what this Betula Teveret is. It says one of them is a Shushan Satum. It's a closed rose. So as opposed to an open rose or a petal of a single rose, it's a closed rose. Or the Rabbeinu Haigon Hayashune Tilat Vered. It's the wick and savuak min vered that is colored like a rose. Bikori noto, vered, and then we call it a vered. So it's a, I don't know if you want to call it artificial rose, but it's really a wick that was made out of cotton, but they colored it like the rose, and therefore it got the name or the nickname, the rose. And that's what maybe it's referring to over here. So here are some alternatives as to what this is. Now, in all of these cases, the items are even the smallest amount. You're not allowed to carry the reach ra, as Rashi says, shema ashnin behen cholin. That you use it, smoke out the sick people or the children. You're going to chiltit lavriach malav mazikin to get rid of the evil spirits that are there. So this bad smell, even the smallest amount, is used to remove these evil spirits. The argaman, tsevet zovim bo argaman, the coloring for the argaman. And time aloit parish, Rashi says, that it's not to explain why, that this is even the smallest amount. He says, "V'li nira shigam hu ra'oi la'riach," that it also has a pleasant aroma to it, and it's used in that way. Could be that it was very expensive, just like techilit was extremely expensive. Argaman was also expensive. Turns out, from what we've figured out from the archaeology today, they're actually made from the same material, the argaman and the techilit. It has to do whether it's put in the sun. If it's put in the sun, it turns blue and makes the techilit. If it's not, it remains purple. And so it's just as rare as techilet, so maybe that's why it was considered to be something, even a koshu. And again, the betulat teveret, I assume, is either for beauty, you know, rose petals, or for smell. And therefore, each of these is considered to be significant. Mini matechot, koshein, metals, even the smallest amount. L'maychazu, what is that ra'ui for? Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Omer Shekin, ra'ui l'asot mimenu darben katan. To make from it a small goad. You would put it at the tip of the goad, to make something, either a spur or at the top of the goad, you need a little metal to put on the tip when you are goading the animal so that it'll be strong. So that'll be a metallic tip to it. So that's why even the smallest amount of metal is considered to be significant. Tanu Rabbanan, Homer Arai Alai Barzel, person who says or promises to Hekdesh that he's going to bring Barzel, iron. Karim Omim, lo yifchot mi amal amah. You may not bring less than one by one amah. My chazio. Well, why would you bring one on one amah? What is significant? Or why is that considered to be the right amount to bring? Rabbi Yosef, lekalia oriv. It's to shoo off the pigeons. The proper translation of oriv is coming about a crow or raven. Oriv is a raven. But the more likely scenario is that they were talking about the pigeons, who are the much more pesty and cause problems in terms of roosting. I don't think that the ravens were as difficult or as many to deal with. That you can't bring less than the pigeon spikes. The kama. And what was the pigeon spikes? Amar Rav Yosef, ama al ama. One ama by one ama. Which is what was placed on top of the heichal, on the heichal building. They used to have spikes to keep the pigeons from roosting on top of the heichal. And they were, according to many, shaped like triangles. They were shaped like this to come to a point. And a lot of the pigeons there, there are others who think that there were actually spikes up there, kept away the pigeons from roosting on top of the heichal. There is an argument Tosafot brings over here in short, though it's much more extensive in Arachin and other places, that those that argue that in the Mikdash Rishon, because of the Kedusha, they did not need the Kal Yoriv. Kal Yoriv was only needed in the second Beit HaMikdash when the Shekhinah was not present in the Heichal, and therefore it did not scare away the pigeons, and they needed some physical device to get away the pigeons, whereas in the Mikdash Rishon, because the Shekhinah was present, that Kedusha kept away the pigeons. The Tosafot rejects it, Veleta, and he brings proof to the fact that even B'Mikdash Rishon, it seems that there was a Kal Yoriv, that they did have it even in Mikdash Rishon, and that it did exist to keep the pigeons away. Nechoshet, comes to copper, lo yifchot mima'a kesef. By copper, you may not bring less than a silver coin's worth. This is a little strange, as Tosafot notes. I mean, Rashi and Tosafot explain it the same way, that you bring copper the size of a silver coin, a silver ma'a. But the problem is that there was a copper coin at the time, which was a pruta. So why did the Gemara, and that's what Tosafot asks, I don't really understand, they should have just said pruta. It would have been a lot easier to do it, because there is a copper-sized coin, and that would have made more sense. Tanya Rabbi Elazar Omer, lo yifchot mitzinura katana shel nechoshet. You shouldn't bring less than a small pipe's worth of nechoshet of copper. My chazio. What is that useful for? Amar Abaye, shemechatatin ba'at aptilot, mikanchina neirot. It's a type of fork, as Rashi says, mazleg katan, which they use to scrape out or clean out the tilot, the wicks, and the neirot, which are the lamps themselves. They use this tzinora to scrape it out or to take out the ashes, the oil, and the wicks that were inside of it. Makak svarim o makak matpechot. The dust that is created by the decay from the sfarim and the covers. Amri Yehuda, makak de sifrei. This makak, which actually is a worm that eats the books. This takach de shirai, the worm that eats silk. The ilah, the envy, and the worm that eats the grapes. Upa de teine, and the worm that eats the figs. Veha de rimone, and the worm that eats the pomegranates. Kulu sakanto. All of them are dangerous. Now, they're all the same type of thing, which is that they are some sort of parasite or pest that lives inside of these items. It lives off of them. It eats them, these worms. These are just different ways to express it depending on the fruit or the item that they're found in. So it's a similar item. As Rashi says, they're all tolat. They're all worms that are inside of them. They just have a different name based on what they are eating. So all of them are dangerous to eat. There was this Talmud who was sitting in front of Yochanan. He was eating figs. He says there are thorns inside of the figs. The pa is about to kill this young student, meaning that he had swallowed the figs with this worm inside of it. And then what he felt in his throat was the worms eating into his throat or causing some sort of damage inside of him. Therefore, he thought that he was going to die from it. And that's what the Gemara is noting here, that these worms are all dangerous to ingest. All right. Mishnah Amutzi Kupat Haruchlim. Someone who takes out a spice tray. Afa pi sheish ba minim harbe, enu chayav ela chatat achat. He's only chayav one chatat. So even though you have a spice tray that has multiple bowls of spices in it, when you carry it out, it's only considered to be one carrying. Tosafot already raises the issue and says, doesn't understand what the chiddush of the Mishnah is. It says, Tema, Damai Kamashmalan, Pshita, Tafilo Bahotzi, Vechazar Bahotzi, Enu Chayev Alachat. Even if you carry out once, then carry it again, you're only chayev one if it's in one halam, if it's in one forgetting. If you're carrying in one forgetting, it should be relevant how many items you are carrying out. So why does it matter that this is classified as a single item, this tray of spices, that it's considered to be one or seven? Makes no difference, because if it's done in one forgetting, you're only going to bring one chatat, no matter how many violations that you have over here. So he says, I'm not exactly sure what the chiddush is. He says, v'teretz rabbeinu tam, demayri kigon shenodolo al minzeh, v'nitchaper. The answer is that he figured out, he carried out this spice tray with a number of bowls in it, and they told him about this one. He took out this part, v'nitchaper, and he brought his korban, v'chazor nodolo al min acher. And then he finds out about another spice that he had on the tray. V'ilachi patur, davi kumol kubad dvar echad. It's considered to be one thing. So what we had saw before in the Gemara, and this isn't so simple, we saw before in the Gemara what creates a chiluk chataot, what divides up for chataot. Is knowledge enough to divide up the chataot? If you find out that you did something wrong and you already separated a chatat, or if you know about that you need to separate a chatat, what causes division? We had a machloket Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan earlier in the Masechta about this. So Rabbeinu Tam says that's what this Mishnah is coming to negate, that no matter what over here, even when you find out after the fact about these knots, all together, but you find out about them individually, and you already brought your chatat, the one chatat will cover everything because it was only one violation here, not multiple violations. Whereas the Ri doesn't like it as much, and he said he found in the Yerushalmi, lo nitzrachal Rabbi Lozer, shlo tomar minim harbei, yasu ke'alamot harbei, v'yechayav ato achat v'achat. That Yerushalmi says that this Mishnah is coming to negate the position of Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Lozer says, and we had this earlier, that different species, different types, are considered automatically different halamot, different forgettings. If you had two types of meats you ate, or the chaylev was cooked in different ways, he said that that was considered to be different violations. We saw that earlier again in the Masechta. So this is coming to negate that opinion here. So just because you have multiple spices over here, that's not automatically making you into multiple chataot, or multiple forgettings. So that's how the Ri explains it, in order to come up with something, or why it's relevant that this is considered to be one, and not multiple spices over here. Zaruinei gina. These are seeds for the garden. Pachot mikur geret. It's a little less than a grogeret, less than a fig size. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteiro Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, chamisha, that you have to take out five seeds. In order for it to be significant, you have to take out five seeds. Zera kishuim. If you take out seeds for zucchini, shnayim, two's enough. Zera diluim. Seeds for gourds, shnayim, two is enough. Zera pula mitzri, shnayim. For pula mitzri, it's also two seeds. These are the same items that were mentioned. I don't know if you remember, we brought from the Mishnah in Kilayim. Kishuim, diluim, and pula mitzri. They're considered to be significant plants. They spread heavily. Right? So they are, you only need two seeds because they're already significant enough that two seeds would be enough to plant. Whereas any other zeruinei gina would require five seeds before they are considered to be significant. Just to note, Tosafot says over here, the seeds that we're talking about here is either otam shem ruim l'netia, seeds that normally are planted, or inami klomar makom shurigim l'notan, in a place that they normally plant seeds, favistama l'ntoa. And you normally would assume, if you have no other mindset about them, you don't think anything else about them, then you would naturally plant these seeds. So you carry them out. But if you take out one seed and intend to plant it, you're going to be chayav. Because achshuve, you made it chashuv by taking out the single seed and saying, I'm going to plant it, then we know it's chashuv. We're going to see that later in the Gemara. So here it has to be in a case where he just takes out the seeds without any specific intent, because the nature of these seeds is to plant them, or in that location they normally plant the seeds, you'll be defined by planting of seeds. And what do people normally plant? They plant two seeds of this, five seeds of that, whatever the amount is. But if you have specific intent and you're taking it out to plant it, even if you want to take out one and you intend to plant it, it's already significant for you. Chagav chay tohor. We're talking about a locust that is alive, grasshopper locust that's alive, that's tohor, that is kosher to eat. Koshu, any amount. Mate. If it's dead, krugogeret. Then it's the size of a gogeret, which is food, like normal food. We'll see why the difference between alive and dead in a second. Tziporet akramim. So again, this is a species of locust. Ben chaya ben meita. Whether it's alive or dead, koshu. Even the smallest amount. Shematznino talerufwa. Because they used it for medicinal reasons. So over there, it's not governed by normal eating, even though it's a kosher to eat. Nevertheless, what's governing over here is the fact that it's used for medicinal reasons, and therefore even the smallest amount is considered to be significant, whether alive or dead. Even if you take out a live grasshopper, locust, that is not kosher, kosher, the amount is any amount, shematznino to the katan lischokpo, because they put them away for kids to play with. These were the toys of their day. So the toys of the day, you bring your kid a little grasshopper, a little locust to play with. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's even true by non-kosher locusts. On the other hand, the Tanakhama says it's only true by kosher locusts. And that's why they both said kosher by that which is chai, that which is alive. But it's alive and it's a toy, any amount, because it's useful to give to the kids. Viraminhi. Zevel v'chol hadak. When you take out dung, or sand, very fine sand, kedei the zabel kelach shokruv, the amount you have to take out is the amount to fertilize a single stalk of kruv, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Chamei omrim, kedei the zabel krisha, the amount to fertilize a leek. But what do you see here? That even a single growth, a single item is considered significant. In the Mishnah, you're talking about, you have to take out a little less than a gorit worth of seeds, five seeds, two seeds. Well, here we see that even a single stalk of an item is considered to be significant. So if that's the case, then even one seed should be considered significant. So Gemara says, wait, there's a big difference. Amar Papa ad zriya, had lo zriya. Depends if it's already planted and growing versus if you're going to plant. Nobody takes out a single seed to plant. When you take out seeds, you take out multiple seeds to plant, whether it's two, five, or even more than that. You gotta take out at least a minimum of two seeds, but even more, because nobody just plants one seed. You don't know what's gonna come up. You don't know what's gonna take. Whereas once an item is already taken and growing, then even a single stalk is considered to be significant. And therefore, if you take out fertilizer to fertilize a single stalk, that is considered to be already significant. So it's a big difference between seeding and dealing with something that's already growing. Right? Zera kishuin, tan rabanan. Hamutzi garinim. A person who takes out pits. Now, Rashi says the garanim we're speaking about here are date pits. So if you're taking out date pits to plant them, shtayim, two is considered to be the amount. That is significant. Im le'achila, if it's for feed, k'melo pi chazir, it's like the amount that would fit into the mouth of a pig. V'kamo melo pi chazir, what does that mean? Achat, that's one. So one is enough to stick in the mouth of the pig. Tosafot points out over here, we're talking about to give to a non-Jew. Or to sell to him because there is a restriction against raising pigs in Eretz Yisrael. So if we're talking about raising pigs here, we're talking about by someone who can raise pigs. And therefore you're giving it to them or selling it to them. Im lehasik, if you're using it to fire up the oven, kedei levashel beitzakala, then it should be significant enough that you can cook a chicken's egg with it, like we've seen with other types of firewood until now in kindling. Im lecheshbon, if it's going to be used as a calculator, shtayim. Then you use it two. Chemorim chamesh. At a minimum of five. Nobody forgets two. But once you hit five, people start to forget. And they start to use these date seeds to remind them or to keep track of how many they sold or how much money they owe. And this was early days, their way of tracking or representing. I don't call them today. They use maybe poker chips. They use something that represents the amount that the person owes. Or is taken out a number of an item, and so you use that, these date seeds, as representing whatever those numbers were. Tanravanan, amotzi shnei nimim mizanav asus. Someone who takes out two hairs from the tail of a horse, from mizanav para, from the tail of a cow, chayav. Then you're chayav, why? Shmatznin otan linishbin. Because they put them away for snares. In order to use them in making the nets or snares to capture birds. Makshesh al-chazir, the stiff bristles of a pig. Achat, one is considered to be significant. Surei hadekel, the bands of the palm tree. Shtayim, two of them are considered significant. Torei dekel, whether, I don't know how to pronounce it, whether it's fillet or fillets of the palm tree. Achat, one is considered to be significant. Over here, Rashi explains what they do with these. The hairs, or the stiff bristles of the pig, they use those. It's interesting. He uses it, the shoemaker, uses it to put at the top of his string. So he uses it as a, either it's good for like a needle to stitch for the shoemaker, or the other possibility is for the shoelaces. Like today we have those plastic tops to the shoelaces that make it hard so you could thread the shoelaces through. That he used this. This stiff bristle was the way that they threaded the shoelaces in. So that's one, that possibility of what those were used for. And Rashi says the tsurei dekel, these bands around the dekel, the bark of the dekel are used for making baskets. So that's what those are used for. So therefore two are significant. And to make, Rashi says, shtaim shtei batei nirim. The same name that we, in a weave, it would refer to two batei nirim. It means taking like this, you know, a weave that makes a square, basically, two batei nirim in the weave. So too with the basket, you would need enough. So it really wouldn't be two bands. Two bands would give you sufficient material to make a square that would be the beginning of the batei nirim. And the torei dekel, Rashi says they're dakim mitzurei. They're thinner, narrower than the bands. Says, I have no idea what they use them for. And the Mesorah Tashas brings from the Oruch that they use them to chazlitz for pi dalat. They use them to stitch up the mouth of the gourds. I don't know if it's like the pumpkin tops to put them back on or stuffed pumpkin, stuffed gourds. They stitch back on the tops. I'm not exactly sure what that was used for, but that's what he says that they possibly used them for. Tziporet akramim ben chaya ben meita koshu. My tziporet kramim. What is this tziporet kramim? Amarav palia biare. The searcher of the forests, but it's a type of, or species of locust. Amarabai umishtakach bedikla, dechad navara. It's found in the palm trees that are covered on one side. Ba'avdila de chukma. And they use it for wisdom. Considered to be beneficial for wisdom. Achale the palga de yamina upalga de desmole. So now, he eats, it's not clear here how to read this, I would have read it, that he eats the right side of the locust. Upalga desmole ramile begufta nechusha. And then the left side, he places in this tube of copper. Bichatim la bishitin gushpanke. And then he seals it with 60 seals. Again, that's not literal, that means figurative, that he seals it well. Betalile biivra, the small, and then he hangs it on his left arm. Yeah, anything they want to store, they put into copper or lead tubes, and they seal it with 60 seals. Anything they wanted to store, make sure that it didn't get lost. So then you wear it on your left arm, is simanech. So remember, it is leiv chacham limino. The wisdom is in the right. Leiv ksil lismolo. So you eat the right side, and then you put the left side on your arm. V'chalkim kama debayi. Then you gather as much wisdom as you want. V'gamar kama debayi. You learn as much as you want. And then you eat the left half. That's why you got to store it well. Because if you don't eat the left half, then you're going to forget everything you gained from the right half that you ate. So I read it the way that I thought it would read. There are others that translated that you eat palga de yamino, palga de smole. That you eat half of the right and half of the left, and then the remaining halves you put into the tube. But I think it reads simpler to say that he eats the right half, and then he stores the left half until later. Again, this would seem to be beneficial for memory. It was a memory aid of some sort. Rav Yehuda Meir, afa motzi. What's the machloket here between Rav Yehuda and the Tanakamo? But Tanakamo is avar lo. That they don't give non-kosher locusts to the kids to play with. My time, dim achale, because he might eat it. Mar says, yi achi tor nami. If you're afraid he's going to eat it, then even a kosher locust is a problem. Tav drav kahana, avakam kamei drav. Kahana was sitting before Rav. Avakam aver shushiba apume. He was moving the shushiba, which was a type of locust, on his lips. Moving it back and forth. Amalei, Shakle, Rav said to him, take that away from your mouth. Maybe you're getting a little massage in your lips from the locust, but make sure you don't eat it. We don't want people to think you're eating it. Which would be something that is disgusting. Something that you're not allowed to do. One may not eat a live locust. So even though locust, as Tosafot points out over here, and Rashi points out here, they do not require shechita. There is no requirement of shechita. There is a requirement that they be dead when you eat them. You can't have them be alive when you eat them because you're in violation of Baal Tishaksu, something that is considered to be disgusting or inappropriate to eat. On the other hand, because there is no restriction against that, and there's no Eber Minachai, if you actually pluck off a limb from a live locust, you can eat that limb because now it's severed from the live animal and it's not considered to be a problem of Baal Tishaksu anymore. The source for that, Tosafot brings down here the two possible sources of it. He says, because it's written, Chagavim Achar Dagim, the locusts are written after the fish. Just like fish do not require shechita, so too the chagavim do not need shechita. The other possibility of a source is our Gemara right here, which is that they may not read Shechita, but here our Gemara says that you can't eat them live because of Baal Teshaksu, but the implications from the Gemara, if they're dead, then it's not a problem. I mean, there's no requirement of Shechita to get there. You just have to remove the Isser of Baal Teshaksu. Ella Dilma Mayit Ve'ochile. What's the Tanakam afraid of? That he might die. His friend here, his little toy will die, and he'll pop in his mouth and he'll eat it. Rabbi Yehuda, imayit katan mispat zapidle. If his little friend here dies, he's not going to eat it. He's going to be mourning over it. He's going to have feelings of sorrow for this little friend he has over here, and he's of course not going to put it in his mouth. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda believes you can give a kosher and non-kosher locust to the child to play with, because we're not afraid of him eating it, because he's playing with it as a toy. If it dies, he's going to be upset about it. He's not going to eat it. On the other hand, the Tanagama believes that it's true. While they're alive, they don't eat them. But once they die, they do have this netia. They know that it's food. They might pop it in their mouth. And therefore, they should only give them kosher locusts to play with, not non-kosher locusts to play with. And therefore, the difference in the size will be what you're chayav for on Shabbat. According to the Tanakhama, you're only chayav on a kosher when you're talking about a kosher locust, because that's what you would give to a kid to play with. Non-kosher locusts are not useful. If they're not useful, then you have to come up with a size that's considered to be useful, whether it's a krugeret for ochel for somebody else who's non-kosher, whatever that size is. But it's not going to be a kosher. Rabbi Yehuda believes that even a non-kosher locust is used as a toy, and therefore it also has this same significance in a kosher because it can be given to a child to play with. Again, the next parak. Next parak begins, Amatznia lezera uledugma ulerufua. Someone who puts something away for seeding as a sample or for medicinal reasons, veotzio b'shabbat, and he takes that on Shabbat, chaya b'kosher. It's chaya b'kosher. He put it away for that reason. Even though that may not be the main reason or primary reason this item is usually utilized for, but he specifically put it away for that reason, then if he takes it out on Shabbat, he's chayav. Kol Adam, anybody else who takes it out, enu chayav alav elekishi uro. Anybody else is only chayav based on what normal people would take out with regards to this item. By storing it for medicinal reasons, he gives it significance, even though that's not the normal utility for this item. So because he gave it significance, now if he carries it, he's going to be chayav, because he gave it significance. But anybody else who interacts with it will not be governed by his decision to make it into medicine or his decision to make it into a sample or a seed. That if he carries that shiur out, then it'll be chatzi shiur, considered less than a shiur, it'll be a sur, but not chayav a chatat. He would have to carry out whatever the standard shiur is for that item in order to be chayav a chatat. Chazar v'ichniso enu chayav el kishiro. This individual who took it out already and then brings it back in, then he's only going to be chayav on the regular size once he brings it back in. Because when he brings it back in, nimlach alav shelo lizoro bitel machshavato. He takes it out to plant it, and then he changes his mind and he brings it back in. Once he brings it back in, then he defaults to the normal standard of shiur for this item. Because he's no longer using it for this smaller shiur, for the significance that he gave it. When he takes it out, it'll be chayav on that. But if he changes his mind and brings it back in, then he'll be governed by the normal shiurim that everybody else is governed by. As Tosfa points out here, he's not sure exactly why this mishnah is here and what the significance of this mishnah is. Says Tamilari, that ma'it strich lemit nele hatana lechadazimna. We already saw this in Perek Klal Godol, that she'enu kasher le'atznia, enu chayav le'matznia, something that normally is not put away or stored at this level or this size. The only one who's chayav is the one who stores it. So you already had a mishnah like this. He's not exactly sure what the mishnah is adding over here. There are others who try to give significance to this. I think to be the mishnah is just laying out the principle again, which is that significance can be determined by a single individual. It could be subjective rather than objective in terms of attaining significance. On his way out, I don't think the Gemara is saying that if he returns it back, that he's not chayav for the taking out. Taking out is chayav because his intent when he took it out was for that amount, and therefore it was significant to him on the way out. He intended to carry it from here to there. He did what he intended to do, so he should be chayav. Just now, when he changed his mind on the way back in, he's changed what is considered to be significant. Two separate violations. Yeah, that's how I would look at it. So, lamalei the mitnei hamatznia. Why does it say hamatznia? He put it away. Just say litnei hamotzi. Luzeru l'dugma l'rufa chayav b'koshu. Why do you have to store it to give it significance? If you carry it out, you give it significance. I mean that if you carry the seed out to plant it, you've given it significance. Why do you have to store the seed first and then carry it out in order to give it significance? Why does the mishnah use the term matznia instead of amotzi? So, amar abaya chumayeskinan gagon shi'tznio v'shachach lama itznio. It's a case here where he stored it, but he forgot why he stored it. V'hashta kamapi klei stoma. And now he's just taking it out without thinking about it. He starts to take it out. Ma'u detema, what would I thought? Betulei betela makshavato. That we erase his original makshava, because he forgot about it. unless he has active machshava, he has active thoughts to negate what his original intent was, he's still governed by his original intent. So if he stored it for a specific reason and carries it out afterwards without thinking about it, his carrying out will be governed by the original storing that he did. Even though now he doesn't remember exactly why he stored it, but because he originally had intent, and now he doesn't have anything to undermine that intent, he'll be governed by that original intent of why he stored it. And so that's the significance of the Mishnah of Hamatzniah. Hamatzniah will tell us what the shiur is for Hamotzi, even though now when he's taking it out, he doesn't remember why he put it away. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Michayev haya Rabbi Meir, af Hamotzi chita achat bezriya. That Rabbi Meir would be Michayev, even if you took out a single seed, a wheat seed, a kernel, for planting. Amar says, pshita koshutznan. That's what our Mishnah says, any amount. So Mamma to Tema, what I would have thought, koshu la fuke mi grogeret. I would have thought that koshu comes to say, we're not using the normal shiur for food items, which is a grogeret, a fig size. So koshu means just less than a grogeret. It doesn't mean really a koshu. Along comes Rabbi Meir to say, no, it means a real koshu. Maybe you'd have to have a minimum shiur like a kazayit. Other shiurim that we see in the Torah, you'd have to go down. What it means is, if you say koshu, it means drop down from kugera to the next level down. What's the next level down? Kazayit. So that's kamash malon, that's not the case. Matki v'la Rav Yitzchak, greater of Yehuda. So now he raises a question. Ela me'ato, if that's true, chishev lotzi et kol beito. He intends to take out his entire house. Not just one item in the house, he wants to take his whole house out. And it's only considered significant to him if he takes all the possessions of his house out. So there, what are we going to say? Ochanami glo mechayev adamapik l'kulei? So here he's not going to be chayav until he takes out the entire house. So the question here is, who's this question on? Rashi claims that the question is on Abaye. Abaye who says that everything is governed by your original intent. So that's what the question here is. If we're governed by original intent, over here his intent is to take out the entire house. So that should only be significant once he takes out the entire house. That's the way Rashi reads the question. The Tosafot says that he doesn't think that's right, because otherwise why did the Gemara wait until here to ask on Abaye? It should have asked earlier on Abaye. But rather, this is a question, Rav Porat, in the name of the Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam says that this is on Rav Yehuda, his father. That Matkav Rav Yitzchak Brei de Rav Yehuda is asking on his father Rav Yehuda, just quoted, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Michayev Ayah Rav Yemeir, Afa Motzi Chita Achat Lezviyah. You see that it's subjective. So subjective thoughts can change whether something is considered chashuv or not. So if that's the case, this person here also thinks it's only chashuv. He takes out his whole house. So do over there. He should only be chayev after he takes out his whole house. So Gemara says, "Otam b'teila dato etzel kol adam." Over there, we say that we negate his thought to what the standard of normal people is. What's interesting here is that we only say that in one direction. When it's above the standard shiur that people use, the standard objective shiur that people use, then we're going to say b'teila dato etzel kol adam. This guy is strange. This guy is off his rocker. He thinks it's only significant if he gets that level. Everybody else thinks it's significant at this level. So since his shiur exceeds what is normal, there we say b'teila dato etzel kol adam, that his thoughts are negated towards what is considered the primary utility of this item, what most normal people would do with this item. And so therefore, the maximum shiur that you can have for an item is what the normal standard is. Whereas, if you give significance to something that is a smaller shiur than that is normal, there we do not say b'teila dato etzel kol adam. There we say you gave it significant, you are achshave, and therefore you can drop the shiur down. So what ends up turning out here is that the way to phrase it is that you're chayav for the lesser of the standard shiur and what you consider to be significant. So whichever is the lower shiur, then you'll be chayav for. If the standard shiur is less, then that will govern, and we'll say b'teila dato etzel kol adam. If your shiur, the achshavei, what you consider to be significant, is less than the standard shiur, that will govern. So it's a lesser of the two. The lesser of what you consider to be significant and the standard shiur, that will govern what is considered to be chashuv when you carry it out. Now again, that's only for you. That's subjective. That's for you. For anybody else who carries it out, they'll still be governed by the standard shiurim because they don't consider this to be significant. Yours making it significant cannot make it significant for him. That's subjective. That doesn't change the objective standard for anybody else. Okay, we'll stop over here.